2001 was Hollywood's biggest year in box office history. Movies brought in more than $8.3 billion. Five films topped the $200 million mark this past year. Another 12 topped $100 million. A few weeks ago, NPR's Bob Mondello said there weren't very many high-quality movies among those blockbusters, but he's found more than enough other films to fill a 10-best list.
In a year when observers not only can't find a front runner in the Oscar race, but can't even settle on a field of probable contenders, there is still one thing on which everyone can agree, from small children to the most jaded critics. Shrek was a hoot.
Shrek! I'm looking down! Oh, God, I can't do this. Just let me off right now, please.
But you're already halfway.
Yeah, but I know that half is safe.
A humane and very funny family film about a lovable ogre who sets out to make the world safe for fairy tale characters, Shrek marked notable advances in computer animation, as did another of the year's best films, which also concerned an odyssey of sorts, the tale of a brave young hobbit who sets out to make the world safe for the inhabitants of Middle-earth.
I wish the ring had never come to me. I wish none of this had happened.
So do all who live to see such times, but that is not for them to decide. All we have to decide is what to do with the time that is given to us.
There may be a box office battle between the two big wizard franchises, but there's no question that Lord of the Rings is the better movie. Imaginative, well-acted, and frequently thrilling, its 3 hours fly by in a whirl of adventure that leaves audiences panting for more. Alas, we'll have to wait a year for the second installment. Smaller films also offered adventure, none more so than a movie that took the unusual tack of telling its story backwards as a way of putting the audience in the same predicament as its hero. Memento is about a guy who's trying to solve a crime, but who has suffered an injury that keeps him from forming new memories. So every time he meets someone, it's as if it's for the first time.
Natalie.
You don't remember me.
I'm sorry, I should have explained. I have this...
You did explain, Lenny.
Please call me Leonard. My wife called me Lenny.
Yeah, I know, you told me.
Well, then I probably told you how much I hated it.
Yeah.
Memento's odd structure made it a fascinating puzzle, and that was also true of the Mexican film Amores Perros, which told three interlocking stories involving dogs, blending Tarantino-style action with a lively surrealism. Director Alejandro González Iñárritu even used the film's structure to examine class issues, cramming everything he could into the movie, as if he realized, being a first-time director, that he might not get a second chance. Another foreign-language film, Divided We Fall, took a more measured, realistic approach to chronicling the efforts of a Czech couple to hide the son of a Jewish neighbor from the Nazis. By being carefully non-judgmental in its treatment of a host of complicated characters, the film worked new wrinkles on familiar subject matter. A French comedy turned pretty much the opposite trick, being wildly judgmental about a host of stereotyped characters, all of whom find their lives immeasurably enriched by contact with an adorably shy young Parisian named Amélie. If you don't like subtitles and are using that as an excuse not to see Amélie, you're depriving yourself of the year's sweetest romantic comedy. That's six of the year's top ten. The remaining four are all concerned with conflict, two of them in a military context, the other two in a suburban one. The suburban pictures are quietly devastating portraits of unease. The haunting low-budget film, L.I.E., which stands for Long Island Expressway, but also obviously for what those letters spell, watches a bond forming between an essentially parentless adolescent boy and an older man who enjoys the company of adolescent boys more than society allows. The film's strength lies in how it makes audiences as queasy about their own reactions as about those of the characters. A different sort of unease underscores In the Bedroom, a tragedy about parents who sense trouble brewing in their son's romantic life, but feel they shouldn't interfere.
Oh, God, you don't think he wants to...
Oh, he's not going to marry her.
Well, then what's he doing with her?
She probably loves him. Girls always have. Let's just leave it at that.
Sissy Spacek and Tom Wilkinson head a cast that never once strikes a false note. The two movies about military conflict couldn't be more different, either from In the Bedroom or from each other. Black Hawk Down tells the story of a tragic 1993 U.S. military mission in Somalia, a quick surgical strike that was supposed to take 45 minutes and that instead turned into a pitched battle on the streets of Mogadishu when a Black Hawk helicopter was downed by enemy fire.
Got a Black Hawk down. men are surrounded by thousands of Somali militia. I need help now.
18 American soldiers and hundreds of Somalis were killed, and director Ridley Scott puts you right at the center of the action. It is not an easy movie to sit through, but it's certainly visceral filmmaking. If Black Hawk Down takes a painfully realistic approach to establish that war is hell, No Man's Land is every bit as effective, taking an absurdist approach. It places three soldiers in a trench in the Balkans and marvels at how no one can figure a way to get them out. Especially not the UN.
Ah, hello, Captain Dubois. How can I help you?
Well, sir, it's the first time that the two camps are asking me for the same thing, and I don't know what to do.
Yes, I mean, you can't expect me to risk the lives of our soldiers in order to save theirs, can you? I hope I don't have to remind you, Captain, of the precise purpose of our mission here in Bosnia.
So what should I tell them, Colonel, sir?
Tell them that, as usual, neither side can agree. Tell them anything you like, Captain. Goodbye.
No Man's Land is a cross between MASH and Waiting for Godot, at once funny and wrenching, with an ending that'll send you out of the theater with nerves jangling. 10 is an arbitrary figure, so let's ignore it. Also terrific was the documentary Startup.com, which proved the truth about the internet could be stranger than fiction, and Ghost World, which proved that fiction, at least when regarding teenagers, is still plenty strange. The Visit was an undersung African-American film about a young man in prison. And 2001 brought a pair of wildly effective, very different movie musicals, Moulin Rouge, about a guy, a girl in a 19th century nightclub, and Hedwig and the Angry Inch, about a rock performer who builds his whole act around his botched sex change operation.
My sex change operation got botched. My guardian angel fell asleep on the watch. Now all I've got is a Barbie doll crotch. I've got an angry inch.
In contrast to this showy, not-becoming-a-woman story, Iran gave us a three-part feminist saga called The Day I Became a Woman, and Robert Altman's Whodunit, Gosford Park, the Coen brothers' Black and White Noir, The Man Who Wasn't There, and Francis Ford Coppola's Longer and Stronger, Apocalypse Now Redux, were all fascinating. That's very nearly a second 10, which gives us something to hold on to as we head bravely into a movie year that will bring us films called Insomnia, The Panic Room, Confessions of a Dangerous Mind, Manic, and Prozac Nation. Think maybe Hollywood knows something we don't? I'm Bob Mondello.